true.
Yeah, for sure. So I have a
So,
first question for you.
yeah.
What going kind of going back, what brought you to Vienna 1900 as an area of study?
That's a really interesting question because I have no personal connections at all with Vienna.
Okay.
So my grandparents came from Eastern Europe to Britain in the early 19, late 1890s, I think, and were, I was Jewish born, but I had no other connection at all to, well, I had no connection to Vienna. I happened on a marvelous module that I did as part of my art history degree at University of London. I mostly focused on fin de siècle, turn of the century Europe, basically, once I specialized in the last couple of years of my degree. And there was a module, a two semester module on Vienna, and I just got very caught up in it. It combines my combined my interest that was that preceded it in music, and Mahler and a bit of Schoenberg. Anyway, I'm very interested in music and the visual arts and all the interconnections between the arts. And it just, I think probably I should have some personal connection to Vienna because I've always felt personally and in from a sort of scholarly way, absolutely at home in Vienna. I did my BA dissertation or long essay on Schoenberg's paintings because I kind of wanted to combine that, and it wasn't really very well known when I was doing it in the late 90s, early 2000s, that Schoenberg was a painter, and his paintings were being exhibited around Europe as it happened. And I went off to Italy and looked at them at sort of some exhibition place, and so I kind of got involved in that kind of interface between music and the visual arts then. And then later, after as I was finishing my MA, my professors from the original college tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Look, we've got a fully funded research project with two PhD positions on turn of the century Vienna, which needs unpacking. There's much more to be done than on Paris, for example, and turn of the century, and that's why we got the funding. So why haven't you applied?" And the rest, they say, is history. I have been working with on Vienna ever since, and I've published, as you know, and
And do you speak
it's just
German? I
so
mean,
rich.
do you read German, speak German enough to do research in it yet, or no? Or do you
I'm not
do
going to answer that
translation?
question. So I don't speak fluently and I don't read fluently, but I have become accustomed. I've got a grasp of German, and I've become accustomed to managing. When I did my PhD, I was sort of in the bowels of the archives of the Austrian Theatre Museum in Vienna and the Angewandte University, because I was pursuing the path of Alfred Roller, who was the secessionist who then was airlifted out of the secession to become Gustav Mahler's stage design director. For several years until Mahler went off to New York, and he continued as an eminent stage designer, working with Strauss and various other opera composers in the German-speaking world. So I was actually having to, go through his notebooks and his letters and articles in German. So I did a bit of, I did a few classes, and ever since I've managed. That's all I would say. So yeah, I don't, but I don't, I mean, I, you know, it's a big, it, I would like to be much more fluent, but I do manage.
And turning now to this work, this book,
Yes.
usually this period, it's been exhausted in terms of painting, right? Every written text on it, we'll always look at Schiele and Klimt and Kokoschka and that whole line, but not much has been ever really discussed in terms of the graphic design side. And you're
Yeah.
not trained as a graphic designer, so this must have been new. Was this new territory for you, going into such detail with that?
Not, well, as it happened, not with this amazing and beautiful volume. I'm not a graphic designer, but then I'm not an artist either. So, and I'm an art, art historians aren't always artists, as you know, and design historians aren't always designers, in fact, very rarely. So when I was doing my PhD and using Alfred Roller as my kind of, as the sort of figure that sort of illuminated various aspects of Vienna, of Viennese modernism, one of the first roles that he had as a secessionist was a contributor and editor of Ver Sacrum, or their art periodical, which was published from 1898 to 1903. And I still don't quite know why, but I decided that an analysis of Ver Sacrum, this very, very curious but notable art periodical, was going to constitute at least one chapter of my PhD. And then I moved into the exhibitions, the secession exhibitions, and then I moved into onto the opera stage, so to speak, these three spaces. And I had a marvelous supervisor, an expert on sort of the German speaking world and graphic design, in Jeremy Ainsley, who happened to be my supervisor here in Britain. And together we kind of studied, I was encouraged to study, and nothing was online then, the kind of original copies of Ver Sacrum, to try and make sense of what was going on there, and how things were working and what they were intending, and how it sort of fit with the rest of their activities. So I kind of forced myself into this position of getting to grips with the graphic arts. And that's, as I said in the introduction to the article, this chapter that I've written for the book, I then went to Vienna and did the first archival research I'd ever really done in my life. I went to the MAC, the Museum of Applied Art, Kunst.
And you were looking specifically at issues of Ver Sacrum there?
I was looking, well, we had issues of Ver Sacrum here at the National Art Library, but I wanted to go and look at Roller's poster art for the secession. And literally, you know, I got into the archives at the MAC, and downstairs in the vaults, they started to show me these wonderful facsimiles of well, they were actually the original print runs of some of the posters, and started to talk to me about this thing called Flächenkunst.
And my follow-up question was,
so that's what I got.
How would you describe,
excited about this.
Yeah, what is Flächenkunst? And I'm sure that's a new word for particularly English speakers, but how would you describe it? And why do you think these secession artists were so preoccupied with this new field?
Is interesting is that the archivists who look after the Wiener Werkstätte and secession works on paper still talk about this art form. So Fläche, F-L-A-U-M-L-A-C-H, die Fläche is the surface, and Kunst, of course, is art, so it's surface art. But for some reason or other, the Viennese endowed this kind of art form with a kind of aura that made it clear that they felt that they had kind of moved forward or in a different direction to the kind of graphic arts of Art Nouveau, that were the sort of whiplash Art Nouveau of Paris, and had moved into a kind of different arena. So Flächenkunst is so called, I believe, or they so called it, because the graphic elements, the graphic motifs, are much more geometricized in form, and they play with a kind of negative, positive dimension of the surface of the page, if you like, or the poster design, or whatever it is, or the paper. So you get this light, dark, geometric friezes of tiny little emblematic sort of triangles and strange motifs, which are then repeated patterns through a page or on the page. And what's so fascinating about this sort of surface art is that several of them became really competent in creating these designs on paper, these sort of negative, positive, repeating motifs, which seem to have something. Some of them seem to have something of the organic in them, but they've been sort of flattened out and geometricized, and they're very enigmatic often. And they transfer brilliantly from one flat surface to another, from paper to textiles to motifs on the walls of their modernist houses, sort of repeating patterns around the top of the walls. And Rolla and Coleman Moser in particular, another designer who's not that well known in the English speaking world, was absolutely brilliant at this, and some of his so-called Flächenkunst designs were then picked up and commercially produced by and still are by textile companies. So that's what it seems to be. I mean, if you read the Austrian design historians on it, everyone kind of grapples with some kind of, you know,
I picked up on that.
definition. Yeah, I do go into it in quite a lot of detail in the book, so I just recommend that people read it.
You did
Does
mention.
that help? Does that help, though?
Yeah, it does for sure. And I mean, would you say the role of the publication was a commercial enterprise? Did they, I think you mentioned in your article, it's still not really quite clear who the readership of this was, but were they trying to, do you think, were they trying to promote surface design on a commercial level, or were they just graphic experiments?
I think it is quite, it's a bit of both and everything, and perhaps a bit more than that. So in Versacrum was very much the kind of herald of the kind of art endeavors of the secessionists, the breakaway artist group under Gustav Klimt, who then staged all those exhibitions in the Secession House, which was created by Joseph Maria Ulbricht. And a lot of these kind of flattened designs came out in the way that they designed the exhibitions in the Secession House, for example, and the walls of the Secession House. And I think they just felt this was an Austrian art that they had managed to transition to. And if you read some of the, well, if one reads again in German, some of the sort of founding articles about what they wanted to achieve, which were printed in Versacrum and also by followers of Versacrum, it was to create a uniquely Austrian art, and in competition with Paris, you know, that people might have gone to Paris for their fabric designs, but they're now going to come to Vienna. As for Die Fläche, this sort of journal, it was very much intended. It was sort of it was pioneered, if you like, or common. It was sort of introduced by the secessionists who became the professors at the Kunstgewerbeschule, the Applied Arts School, which was literally transforming the way the applied arts was taught, in fact. And it was much more egalitarian. Women students were there as well as men and were encouraged. They didn't quite get to do everything the men were doing, but very much encouraged in the graphic arts to come to the classes and everything. And Die Fläche looked as if it was pioneered by those Joseph Hoffmann, Coleman Moser, Alfred Rolla, to showcase the work under their supervision of the sort of students at the
Students, right.
Kunstgewerbeschule.
Right.
When I looked at all the weird and strange little motifs in Versacrum, it seemed to me, which were designed by everybody from Klimt downwards and sideways, they all turned their hand to the graphic arts. It wasn't that they saw it as a separate thing, not for them, you know, whether they were art painters or not. It seemed to me that they were kind of really using the medium of Versacrum and the medium of Die Fläche, as you say, as a kind of calling card for their work, as a kind of way of promoting their art form, and you know, for the commercial world as well. This was very much intended that these students should go out into the commercial world and earn their living through graphic design.
And there was I mean, it's thanks to this magazine, we see for the first time a lot of female students contributing their work. Would you say this was an important publication in actually bringing the work of female artists into the forefront of Viennese society?
I would say it was, as you say, you did ask me where it was circulated, and it's not entirely clear who actually bought it, where it was circulated. I mean, Versacrum was circulated much more widely to the public in the first couple of years and helped to fuel the sort of secession popularity in the early years. It's not as clear who actually bought Die Fläche and how it was circulated. But I would say definitely. because it was pre-war, pre-First World War, and showcasing the work of a lot of women artists, young women artists, who also went on to have careers in the interwar period. That it was probably one of the first publications that determined to do that, and that was very much linked to the policies, I think, of the Kunstgewerbeschule, which was to encourage and to have a much more sort of democratic view of who should be studying these art forms. Well, the two things were linked, but yeah, I think it was one of my colleagues, Megan, has written extensively about some of those women artists who then went
And the
on to do some.
pedagogy that was, involved with pattern making and
Exactly. I mean, the good thing is, I think that the male major artists of the Vienna Secession didn't seem to see. I mean, obviously, painting was the primary art form for Klimt. He wasn't as such a graphic designer, but they didn't see it as a medium that was beneath them. Let's put it that way, because I mean, Kokoschka, for example, started his career in a sense at the Wiener Werkstätte, doing the very controversial illustrated poems that he did, which looked on paper, using a kind of childlike stroke, folkish kind of art form, some beautiful illustrations with a stream of consciousness poetry, which was actually very sexual and very naughty, very misleading. The drawings look very innocent, and the poetry is certainly not. So yes, I mean, like on Schiele, not so much, but certainly Kokoschka. And so they did seem to not differentiate. They didn't have such a strict hierarchy as you might have found in France, for example. Although, of course, at the turn of the century and with Art Nouveau, artists were very keen to start working in paper and on posters in order to publicize their work. But it was unique in Die Flecker was definitely unique in the sense that it came out of the school, really, in a way, and was promoted by the masters there.
And can you elaborate another word which a lot of English speakers haven't probably come across as Gesamtkunstwerk.
Well,
Can you talk a little bit how this publication also relates to that idea?
yes. So the Gesamtkunstwerk concept in the visual arts originated in part in the influence that Wagnerian ideas had in art more generally, in the visual arts more generally, in the German-speaking world, and comes out of the Wagnerian concept of the unified or total work of art. And was then adopted. It seemed that not only musicians had the heavy shadow of Wagner, the shades of Wagner hanging over them for good and all, certainly well into the middle of the 20th century, if not beyond, but also all artists in, literature, visual arts wanted something of what Wagner had achieved. It seemed to be a kind of transformative idea for the arts more generally. And so there was very often the use of the term Gesamtkunstwerk in the programs for the art exhibitions at the Secession. They always published these programs that that showed what they were doing, and they aspired that the visual arts, that the graphic arts, should go in that direction. You see it very definitely in Vers Sacrum, but also in Die Flecker, where some of the covers, the first cover, in fact, you have this unified way of integrating lettering, the graphic design elements, the page space into one unified whole, rather than having, a banner headline, a bit of copy, and then the illustration separately. So you have this much more unified way of looking at things and bringing all those different elements of the graphic arts together on the surface of the page, so to speak, as one artwork. And their posters, which are often replicated, in fact, in Die Flecker, some of the masters, the teachers, the professors, posters are often actually replicated here as, I guess, examples of that particular art form. You can see it perhaps most clearly in the way that the posters were designed. And Dan's article, also on the lettering expert, who was criticized for having his, that's his, Rudolf von Larisch, who's very little known here, if at all. I'd never heard of him until I was shown
I mean,
some
I
of his work.
to
Nobody knows
yeah, and
about him.
I've actually undertaken a translation of his book, his ornamental
Yeah.
book, because there's they
So
haven't even translated
fascinating.
in English.
No,
So
that's fantastic.
yeah.
So, Rudolf von Larisch was a close colleague of the secessionists. He wasn't part of the secession, but he worked very closely with them in the same kind of in sympathy with this idea of having this kind of integrated notion of what appears on the page or on the poster, this kind of integration, so that the letters form a kind of ornamental, rhythmic pattern across the page, integrated with the rest of the graphic design.
Right. So in a sense, you could take Gesamtkunst for there's two meanings happening in this accession. One, would you say it represents like breaking the hierarchy between fine arts and low arts, commercial arts? But also, would you say in graphic design, Gesamtkunstwerk also relates to the typeface being integrated with the image, everything being done together.
Yeah, kind of coordinated whole, the sum of the parts greater than the individual parts themselves. Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah.
great. Let's go back to a little bit about your research. From my understanding, this is the first American, English, North American, facsimile of the magazine. It's never been reproduced. I think it was reproduced in Germany in the 80s by a publisher, but very hard to get. So how did you tap into the research for this? Did you it's a extremely rare magazine. I have two issues. I've never seen them. Extremely expensive in auction. So did you get to actually see some in person, or did you work from facsimiles? How did you tap into the research for this particular project?
So when I was doing my research for my thesis, for my doctoral thesis, I was, I had access to de Vlaeche in the MAC reading rooms and the National Library, and so I did look at it. It wasn't then the main focus of my work, but I was very interested in the fact that, because I was trying to understand what this thing called Flächenkunst was, had emerged and who'd written about it, and how one could use it to understand better what the Viennese graphic artists were trying to achieve. So I did have a good look at it then, and so I was sort of familiar with it and some of its content, and some of the content that's in Die Fläche I already knew very well from their poster art, which I had seen in flesh, so to speak, also when I was doing my research, and I'd written up a lot in my thesis because Rolla was responsible for a lot of the groundbreaking posters. But when I was actually writing on this, this was quite a difficult and challenging thing because it all started to happen during COVID. So I know that I think there is a set of copies at the National Art Library, which is part of the V&A Museum in London. I would have gone to Vienna definitely had I not been tied to,
So you were
tied to.
under pretty much a travel ban while you were working on this, right?
Yep. Pretty much, not only a travel ban, but I couldn't go to the British Library either, or the National Art Library, which happened to be closed at the time. I mean, the wonderful people at the archive basically set, they have a set, obviously, and so I was working from their complete set of PDFs, basically, of images. And then I demanded that they sent me paper copies. I just could not work off the screen. I had to have. So I was a bit sort of, let me on paper. I've got to see it on paper because I needed to keep it. It doesn't have a unifying thematic editorial content. So all of us working on this, I guess, have found our own way of trying to see what's going on behind. Which is why I called my article Surface and Depth, what's going on underneath, what might have been, what might have been a classroom exercise that ended up, with students producing various illustrations For a particular company, corporate company that they might have been set as a classroom exercise. I mean, a bit of it was sort of educated guesswork, but yeah, I was working off what I remembered from before, the images online and the paper version which they sent me, the publisher sent me, which was
Great. Well, hopefully you can own a copy, get a copy one of these days for yourself. And
Is they're very faded,
yeah.
they're very fragile, so to have them in this stunning format,
Yeah,
as
I mean, this is
beautifully
a
produced in this from this beautiful paper,
yeah.
fabulous layout. Actually, they come out much clearer than they would do in the actual periodical. I don't know how they've managed to work this kind of miracle,
Yeah.
but you know, the period. I never saw the German reproductions at all. I was only working off the originals from 1908 or whenever. So they are very fragile. So I think this is a very precious thing that
Right.
that
Yeah.
they've done.
And before we wrap up, I mean,
Sure.
if you would consider, was this as would you say Flecken-Kuntz, was it a successful experiment? Or was it sort of like Art Nouveau, a fruitless experiment which ended up being, good in theory, but nobody could really afford Art Nouveau? I guess with Flecken-Kunst, what happened to many of these artists? Was it, or did modernism come and just make it fizzle out? But I know there was a huge gap in time between Volume 1 and Volume 2. So, what's your
Three or four
assessment of that?
years, actually, 3 or 4 years. Well, the gap in the publication is a bit mysterious as well. The then director of the Kunstgewerbeschule sort of had to leave suddenly. They Two or three of the professors were busy founding the Wiener Werkstätte, in fact. So maybe they lost focus on it, or they didn't have the fund. Nobody knows. If only we could sit them down and ask them. As far as I can tell, there's nothing in in the Austrian historiography that tells us why this happened. And nobody's given the publication the attention that it's had until this publication. So I think that it is groundbreaking in a number of ways. As for saying Art Nouveau had no future, well, Art Nouveau certainly sort of the principles of Art Nouveau disappeared. I think what you're, after the war, and but what remained was the sort of extraordinary breakthrough in bringing various different aesthetics together, plus the idea of sort of beauty and art and industry coming together as a whole, then in a unified whole, the sort of Gesamtkunstwerk, if you like, came back in the post-war period through the Bauhaus. And if you look back to the roots of the Bauhaus and the founders of the Bauhaus, is founded in the early 1900s through the sort of development of schools, mainly in Art Nouveau principles. So whilst the actual major characteristics of Art Nouveau certainly did disappear, and the idea of the Wiener Werkstätte of bringing life beautiful to the public more generally did disappear because a lot of the articles weren't affordable. The Wiener Werkstätte did promote very, very demonstrably works on paper, which I think sort of just changed. You can see reflections on the way media is used in the 20th century through from Art Nouveau and succession style and Flecken-Kunst and all these other ways in which various things combined to create a kind of graphic arts movement in the 20th century.
That's interesting. Okay, and my last question is, you've written about Versacrum. You've now written about Die Flecke. Are you going to take a break from the graphic design field, or what's next for you? What do you anything that you're
Well,
working on now or curious about?
I've written quite a lot on Roller's and associated stage design, particularly the sort of landmark 1903 production of Tristan and Isolde, which was Mahler and Roller's first collaboration in Vienna. So I have actually written quite a lot on that and published on that. I'm not writing on graphic design at the moment. I mean, my feet and my heart are planted in Vienna, and then I kind of move outwards from
Yeah.
there. My latest contribution to Vienna or Austrian knowledge, I suppose, if I can put it like that rather pompously, was serendipitously, I started to research the work of the sculptor Anna Mahler. That's ANNA, not Alma Mahler.
And this
Also,
was this
I was.
Alma Mahler's what relation to Alma Mahler?
So it's Alma Mahler's daughter. It was
Daughter.
Gustav and
Okay.
Alma's second daughter. Of course, the
Daughter,
first
you're right.
daughter died tragically. Anna Mahler had a very difficult and restless life. She did become professionally a sculptor in the 1930s in Vienna, and then she had to flee in 1938 because of the Anschluss and because of the rise of the Nazis, and then came to London for a few years. Alma, with her third husband, went off to the States. Anna, the daughter, spent 6 or 7 years in London
Working
and
as a sculptor as well.
desperately trying to work as a
Right.
sculptor
Right.
before she then went to Los Angeles for several years. And I just got very interested in her, and I just published a large piece of, again, the first piece in English on her for some years in
Great.
Sculpture Journal. So that's my latest project,
Wow, I
not in the
can't wait
graphic
to
arts.
learn about her. Yeah, for sure. As someone who
Yeah.
named their daughter Alma after Alma Mahler.
No, Anna,
I
A
know,
double.
but the
Oh, yeah,
relation, yes, maybe
your
my
daughter,
third
sorry.
daughter.
Yeah,
We...
exactly. No. Absolutely sorry. Yes, I remember you did tell me. Yeah. So this is Alma Anna.
Oh,
This is
great.
another Mahler.
Interesting. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Diane. I think, I'm really looking forward to this publication, and it looks beautiful. And
It is beautiful.
I can't wait to pore over your research and Dan and
Thank you.
Megan's and so forth. So,
Well, I'm so glad it's brought us together across the many 18,000 miles or
for
something that
sure.
separates us. Yes, and I now feel, I have another Vienna colleague.
Yes,
There
absolutely.
aren't that many of us actually in the
I think
English-speaking
this
world.
publication will change that. Yeah, I really
I
do. I
hope so.
think this
Yeah,
is, I should have
strong.
mentioned at the beginning, but there really are no English speaking books on specifically Vienna Secession graphics. There's one on Vienna
No.
Secession posters.
Yeah.
There's of course hundreds of books on Art Nouveau with a small chapter on Austria's contribution. But
Yeah.
I think this is such a groundbreaking book because it really is the first English-speaking book that delves into Viennese graphic design.
And
And for
it's
that reason, I think
beautiful.
it's
So,
super
yeah.
important. That's why I wanted
Yeah.
to have this
Well,
interview,
thank
and
you.
I wanted to
Yeah.
spread the word because I've got like there's many Germans written French, Italian, but this is really the first English one. So
Yeah,
exciting.
well, you had it first, Roberto.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, and
Good to
great
see
chatting
you.
with you.
Okay, take care.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.